So the message this morning is about this missing point of the cross. I know we're getting ready to move into this Easter season. We already have, and we understand the place of the cross, most of us, the power of the cross to forgive us, to reconcile us back to God. But there's a part of the cross that I think we have maybe missed, maybe overlooked, and I just want to bring it back to the forefront today. And in doing that, to prepare you for this sometimes ongoing battle that happens inside of our head. It's this battle for what it means to be great. We're obsessed as a culture with being great. And we're obsessed with success. We just don't necessarily know how to define it all the time. But we chase it. And so greatness and success and accomplishment and ambition, these things, the enemy wages this war in our head for what is that? What does it mean? And so today I want to take you back and I want to redefine those things, greatness and success and accomplishment. And I want to do it in terms of Calvary, the cross, not Hollywood, not the media, but can we allow the cross of Jesus Christ to define what success means today? So I'd love you to turn with me to Mark chapter 10. In Mark chapter 10, Jesus is making his way to this cross. He's on his way back to Jerusalem. I'm going to read a fairly significant portion of Scripture today. I know sometimes that's not cool, but it's just going to have to be cool today. All right? Because I want you to hear all of it. I want you to hear the text, and then I want to go back and bring out some points. So let's begin in verse 33. Jesus is talking. Behold, we are going up to Jerusalem. The Son of Man will be delivered to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death, and they'll hand him over to the Gentiles. They will mock him and spit on him and scourge him and kill him. And 3 days later, he will rise again. Now up in verse 32, it says they're walking with Jesus fearfully, and now we know why, right? This talk of death and dying has them confused. They don't know the cross. You see, we have the privilege of being able to look back and know that he was going to the cross and what's going to happen. These guys are right in the middle of it. So they don't know everything that's going to happen. This language is confusing to them. And so it's exciting. He talks about there's this kingdom that's coming. He's been talking about that. It's exciting and it's fearful. And then in verse 35, James and John, the two sons of Zebedee, came up to Jesus saying, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And he said to them, "What do you want me to do for you?" And they said to him, "Grant that we may sit, one on your right and one on your left in your glory." But Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, to be baptized with the baptism which I am baptized?" And they said to him, "We are." And Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you shall drink, and you shall be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized. But to sit on my right or on my left, this is not mine to give, but it's for those to whom it has been prepared." Hearing this, the ten began to feel indignant with James and John. Calling them to himself, Jesus said to them, "You know that those who are recognized as rulers of the Gentiles, they lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. But it is not this way among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant." Do you see that? Whoever wishes to be great among you shall be your servant. "And whoever wishes to be a first among you shall be a slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many." So pick this story up at verse 35 with James and John. And they ask Jesus this question. They come up to Jesus and they say, "Jesus, we want you to do what we're getting ready to ask you to do." Ain't that funny? Have you ever had a child come up to you and ask you that? "Look, I don't want to tell you exactly what I'm going to ask. I just want you to agree to it ahead of time. All right? I just need you to go nod your head that what I'm about to ask, you're going to make it good." And so, in doing that, they have this question prepared, which is, can we sit at your right hand and at your left? And I want to ask you a question this morning, if I can. Here's the question for you. What would you get if you got what you wanted from God? What would you get if you got what you asked from God? Now I know that I have learned over the years, let me put it this way, I've learned over the years that there is the politically correct answer, we'll call it the spiritually correct answer, and then we'll call it the real one, right? So can we just go on and cut through the spiritual one, which is we want the whole world to be saved and peace on earth and goodwill to men? All right? Can we just cut through that one? And let me just ask you, what is it that you really want? And what is it that when given the opportunity to ask God for it, this is the thing that's most important to you? And here's what I'm learning. And I'm just going to set it out there for you. And you can agree with me or you can disagree with me, but I just want to set it out there. We're all getting what we want. Ooh, it got quiet. We're actually getting what we want. Now, I understand that Psalm says that if we delight in the Lord, He'll give us the desires of our heart. But when I look at Romans and I look at this progression of what happens in Romans, it says that God turned them over to their desires. And I would suggest to you today that you're getting exactly what you want. Not from other people, okay? We got to set them aside because they can do all kind of evil against us. And a lot of times we preoccupy ourselves with them. Set them aside for just a moment. And can I suggest to you that you're getting exactly what you want? And you say, but Kevin, I've been praying about this one thing. And I would say, I know, I've been praying about some stuff too. But at the end of the day, sometimes what I want is comfort. And what I'm asking for is costly. And I am not getting this thing that I want because what I truly want is I just want it comfortable inside. So I would suggest to you that when you ask a question of Jesus, you better be prepared. Because he said, what do you want? Because what you tell me you want is going to reveal to me the nature of your heart. And so we see that in the disciples, we see that in ourselves, and then we even see it in Jesus. You remember as he's going to the cross, what is his prayer? This cup. Oh, this cup. Lord, let this cup pass from me. This cup of suffering. Let it pass from me. If there's any way possible, Lord, God, I don't want it. Father, I don't want to go to the cross. But he follows it by what? But not my will. But your will be done. And then over in Hebrews chapter 12, we find out the thing that motivated Jesus to make that road trip from wherever he was to Jerusalem, to Golgotha, and up on the cross. And he says this, it was for the joy set before him that he endured the cross, despising the shame. You see, the cross was not easy. And the shame, he despised it. But why did he finish it? Why did he go on? For the joy set before him, which was at the end of the day, he wanted to restore you and me to the Father. He wanted to create a pathway from us to the Father. And I believe he wanted to get back to the Father. He wanted to get back to his place. But in doing that, he wanted to take us with him. And so that's the desires of Jesus' heart. Now let's look back at the disciples in verse 37. They say, grant that we may sit one on your right hand and one on the left in your glory. And essentially they were saying this, Jesus, what's in it for me? What's in it for me, Jesus? Because we've been at this thing for 3 years, oddly enough, isn't that funny? We got a 3-year ministry. Jesus had a 3-year ministry. And these disciples realize this thing's coming to an end. And they're like, we've been working hard for 3 years, Jesus. We've been following you everywhere you've gone for the last 3 years. We're ready to get paid. Right? You ever done that? You sacrificed. You've, You've made that effort, and you're like, now I want to get paid. I want what's coming to me. And they're like, I want to be on your right hand, and I want to be on your left hand. And in fact, over in Matthew, I believe it's chapter 20, they even got their mama involved. They even got their mama. Their mama comes to Jesus on their behalf to see if they can get one of them on the right and one of them on the left. And I will tell you that throughout most of history, you know, we think, Lord, the world is going to hell in a handbasket. Well, it's been going that way for a really long time, actually. And what's going on today is not much different than what went on back in the day, which is we want what we want, and we're wondering what's in it for me. Now, carry that question then into some other things in your life. Think about marriage for just a moment. And think about approaching marriage with this idea of what's in it for me. Right? You know, we got all these dating sites out there now. And yeah, Lord, I'm so glad I found one without having to use. But you notice the nature in it? You know, put how tall you want them, what kind of measurements you want on them, what kind of education you want on them. Now, is it just me? Or is the question being asked, what's in it for me? How can this person fit what I want in life? And so in our relationships with our marriages, it's what's in it for me? I want to marry somebody. I want to be attached to somebody. I want friends maybe. But I want ones that can do something for me. Yeah? This whole thing of networking, right, is about what? Getting your will done. You know, promoting oneself. And in fact, sometimes I wonder if we don't have kids out of the wrong reason. You know, that we have kids because we think, man, if I have some kids, that'll complete me. You know, the dog and the goldfish didn't do it. That brand new house, that brand new car, it didn't do it. That child, that'll get it. And every time I kind of hear that in somebody, I go, oh, bless your heart. You ain't have one, have you? You ain't had one. That ain't gonna do it. And so we want everything, and we're looking for how it fits us. That's why self-help books and websites are some of the most trafficked places, because we're trying to figure out how to improve ourselves. What's in it for me? And in fact, sometimes we even do that in church, right? Going finding a church is like picking out a brand new car. Show me the amenities, all the little side things, all the little accoutrements. That's French, I believe. And let me see if this thing fits me. And let me see if this thing fits my agenda for what I'm looking at. But then if you look at Jesus, you see something very different. You see that this walk from where he is at having this conversation to Jerusalem is about self-sacrifice. It's about giving his life away. Can you imagine this journey where he knows that he is going to the cross and all of a sudden he stopped? And why has he stopped? Because these disciples want to know if they can sit on his right hand and his left hand in glory. Now come on, it'd take a good man not to choke one of them, wouldn't it? You're like, really, fellas? Really? You've been with me for 3 years. Watch me give my life away. I am headed to the cross. And the only thing that's on your mind right now is what's in it for me, Jesus. In fact, it says that the other disciples over in verse 41, it says they were indignant with them. Not because they had it right, but because they were mad they didn't do it first. Right? They're like, dog, we should have thought of that. I should have brought my mama. Now they're going to get the best spot. You know? And so Jesus is on this journey to the cross and down this road and up to Golgotha. And this is one of my most favorite stories of Jesus in the Bible. I just want to take you to a minute. He's hanging on the cross between two thieves. Remember this picture? One of those thieves is saying, you know what? If you're who you say you are, you ought to get down here and take me with you. What's he doing? He's in it for himself. But this other thief, he's over there, and somehow or another, he spots something in Jesus and realizes, as best he knows how, that he is who he says he is. This is one of those near death, it is a death, it's what do you call it, one of those bedside conversions. This is a bedside conversion if you've ever seen one. It is the last moment that you could be saved. And this thief who was over here on this cross, he looks up in Jesus, and the best he knows how to do is he says, "Will you remember me? Will you remember me?" Now, if you are Jesus, I think about this often. All I can do is shake my head and say, "Oh, Jesus." Because I can tell you, if it was Kevin's job to save the world, I would be up there going, "I just need a moment." Right? I got a bear. I am broken and I am bruised. My skin has been torn. I am hanging naked on a cross. I am dying for the sins of the world. Do you see Jesus in that? Who else wouldn't be up there going, "Look, y'all need to be quiet. I just need a moment." You know? But what does Jesus do? At the very last moment, hanging on that cross with his skin broken, bruised, being cursed and naked before all of mankind, what does he do? He looks over there and he's still got time to get one more. Huh? Yeah. He's still got time for one more. So if you think it's too late for you, oh no, it ain't too late. If there's any breath in you, I assure you there's breath in him that he's always looking over and saying, "Today you'll be with me in paradise." Somewhere up in heaven, I don't know if you instantly recognize people in heaven and if you know people that you shouldn't know, but there's going to be this guy. And you're going to ask him who he is. And he's going to be that thief. And he said, "I made it in. And the only reason I made it in is because I recognized who he was. And he was a self-sacrificing, Calvary-like, cross-like, sacrificing kind of guy who wasn't so much interested in himself, because that wasn't why he was there. And yes, he was interested in the world, but he was interested in me. And I'm here because of him." What a self-sacrificing kind of love. The very last breath, just before it, he finds a way to die for just one more. My goodness. And then back to these disciples one more time. In verse 39, he says, "Can you drink this cup and be baptized in this baptism?" And they say, "We are able." You ever thought that you were able to do something and then you realize you didn't have enough gas in the tank? Right? Your youthful enthusiasm just wore out. Right? Your naivete, that might be French too. You thought you could do it. But then you get in the midst of it and you go, "What in the world did I sign on to? What did I agree to?" And they said, we can do it. And this is where you see two kingdoms at war with each other. Now listen to this. There are two kingdoms that are at war. There is this self-sacrificing, cross-like, Calvary-like kingdom. And there is this kingdom of the world. And they're battling each other right here. And these disciples are actually on the wrong side right now. And often so are we. Because we believe that the way that we can bear whatever it takes, the way we can get it done, the way we can be who we think we ought to be, is through some things like manipulation. We are not at all opposed to bringing mama into the situation when we need her, or daddy, or whoever else. And we will manipulate, and we will coerce however we can in order to get what we want done. We're not opposed to violence, as long as we can get away with it. We're not opposed to exercising whatever power we can come in contact with. In fact, you see that with Peter. He's one of those indignant ones that thought, "Man, I should have asked that question." And you're like, how do you know that Peter just wanted to be part of this earthly kingdom too? Because if you follow them through the Passover and into the garden, Peter's got a sword on him, which means he clearly doesn't understand how this kingdom works. So he's got this sword. And when they try to arrest Jesus, Peter is thinking, oh, wait a minute. No, you can't do that because you're going to mess up my plans. See, because I'm his bodyguard. I can't let that happen. So what does he do? He pulls out this sword and he wields it. And just like would happen if I did, he's like Barney Fife with one bullet. He cuts the guy's ear off. You know? I'm almost convinced he's swinging to kill. And the best he can do is cut somebody's ear off. This servant called Malchus. And you have to look at Peter and you have to look at us and say, why is it that it's so easy for us to harm the people around us to get what we want? Why is it so easy for us to not necessarily wield a sword, but this one? The tongue. Why is it so easy for us to hurt and harm people and to kill them with our tongue? Because we don't understand the kingdoms. And most of the time when we're swinging that, when we're in the wrong kingdom, just trying to get what we want. And so we're self-seeking and we're ambitious. And what does Jesus do? He picks up this ear. It's Luke that actually describes that Jesus picks up the ear. Luke was a physician, by the way. So the physician says, I don't want you guys to miss the point, okay? The rest of the guys missed this, but I just need you to know that Jesus picked up Malchus' ear and put it back on. This self-sacrificing Jesus who says, you boys are about to mess this entire thing up. You're about to cause a kingdom to come, but you don't understand how. So what I'm going to do, Peter, is I'm going to take your mess and I'm going to fix it. Yeah. Any of you ever had to have Jesus step in and fix your mess? You wielded your sword, and just like old Barney and Peter, you messed up far more than you realized, and Jesus said, I got you. I'm going to put this back on because that's not my kingdom. And so he restores Malchus's ear. And he proves to us that this kingdom of God is an upside down kingdom. Do you see what he says? Look back over it at Mark chapter 10. This is the point that we miss of the cross. It's the point that we miss of the crucifixion that I want you to hear today. He says in verse 43, but it is not this way among you, but whoever wishes to be great among you shall be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you shall be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life for many, a ransom. That is cross-like love. And so what does Jesus do? He redefines success. I don't know if you have a definition for success or not, but you need to get one. And one of the best ones that I have ever heard has come from a guy named Pete Scazzaro. And here's what he said. Success is doing the will of God, in the way of God, and in the timing of God. That is success. That you do the will of God, the way of God, in the timing of God. And Lord knows I messed up all three. But that is success. It is not what Hollywood tells you. It is not the life that your friends are living. It is not some example set to you by anyone who is anything other than a servant. And so he redefines success and he redefines greatness. He says, you want to be great? Then go serve somebody. You want to be first in line in the kingdom? Then give your life away to somebody. He redefines leadership. How many of you have experienced selfish leadership? Have you ever experienced it? Woo! It is the most life-sucking thing you have ever experienced. When it's all about me. So all of y'all work for me, right? And all of y'all are accomplishing my agenda, right? And what happens is everybody under that leader dies a little bit at a time. But what Jesus said is, I'm giving you an example of leadership. Are there any people that own your businesses? Are there anybody? Is there anybody in the room? Anybody, a manager in the room? Anybody aspiring to leadership in the room? Let me tell you the model of leadership. Get a bowl and a towel and a basin and wash those feet. That's the example. That is life-giving leadership the way Jesus demonstrates it to us. And so I wrote this on a sticky note so I wouldn't forget it. Most of you can't see that. I said, I cannot miss the point today. And you cannot miss the point today. The thing that we have missed in the cross is the self-sacrificing nature of Jesus Christ to give his life away. The thing that we have missed in the cross is that a cross-like love, down to the very last moment, is always giving itself away. That the very model of Calvary is, how can I serve those? And that out of that, the people who I am serving, they gain life. And that is success. I'm going to be so bold as to say this. If you thought success was any other way, you're wrong. That is success. If you've heard it any other way, you're wrong. This is success. Defined God's way through His very example of His Son, Jesus Christ. So let me ask you a question. Can you drink the cup of everything that I just described to you? Can you drink that cup? Can you drink it in your marriage? In close relationships with family, can you drink the cup? Meaning that rather than try to get your will in your way and convince everybody to do it the way you see it and the way you want it, can you get in there and wash some feet? And can you die to yourself and those that you love? Can you drink the cup in your marriage? Because I can tell you, the most successful marriages you will ever find is where you can get at least one, but preferably two, who are willing to wash feet. In any type of friendship, what you need, if you can just get one who will wash feet, you can work with that. In marriage counseling, I'm usually just looking for one person. If I can just find one who's willing to give their life away, willing to die to themselves in order to be a servant to the other, man, we can move that. But you know what most people want to know? Well, what's in it for me? Can you drink the cup with your children? That you pour yourself into them. And there are times where, and I've heard it from some parents, they said, you know what my child did? They looked at me and they said, you know what? I hate you. I hate you. And you know what the self-sacrificing parent says? Honey, you may hate me, but there is nothing you can do that will stop me from loving you. You can't make me not love you. There is nothing you can say. There is nothing you can do that can run me off. You stuck with me. And then love begins to just, it just begins to move into that situation. But it's a dying, isn't it? Any of you ever face that? It's a dying inside. And you wonder sometimes, is it working? I don't know if it's working. And I will tell you, it's the only way that does work. At work, where everybody's in it for promotion and everything else, can you be the one who can drink the cup? And can you give yourself to the people there and trust that God will make it right? You're like, but if I do that, I might not get a promotion. You might not need that promotion. Can you drink the cup? Can you drink the cup here at Ember? That's what this place was built on, right? Of sacrifice. It wasn't Man, can I find a place where the music's just right and the message is just right and this ministry and that ministry is just right so that it can build in me what I think that I need built? If that's the mindset, I will tell you, man, we got it all wrong. And it's prevalent in our churches, is that we're looking for something that'll feed us. And Sunday after Sunday, we come wanting somebody to feed and wanting somebody to minister. And I'll tell you that there's a death coming in the church. There's a death coming in the church. It's a death to self. It's a death to selfishness. And I will tell you that we will not do it by criticizing. Mm-mm. You know how we'll get it done? Somebody asked me how you'll get it done. I'm glad you asked. Thank you. By example. By example. You want to know how you kill selfishness anywhere, even in the church? It's by example. So I want to take you back to why we got started, which was to serve. It was to go wherever and serve. In fact, you guys, sometimes I have a hard time seeing who's at the back, so I can't tell if he's here, and I don't think that he is. But about 3 weeks ago, you know, I didn't preach. Chris Bender preached for me, and I just sat on the back so I could just observe and pray. An elderly man came in to the building, and he was in the cafe, and Kim Sconyers saw him, brought him into the room, and I think Chris Gaddy was back there talking with her. And this guy passed Ember, and I don't know if he knew it was a church, which, by the way, if you're new, the reason it doesn't say church is because I tell our people it's not the sign's responsibility to prove that this is a church, it's ours. And so I don't know if he knew he was coming into a church or not, but here's the circumstances that he came in under. His grandchildren needed to be placed with him because of DSS was removing them from his daughter who was on drugs. And so DSS needed to remove the kids, and they wanted to place him with Grandpa. But Grandpa didn't have stuff, and Grandpa's house wasn't in the condition for that to be done. And so let me tell you what 3 years of pouring your life out will do. You see, he got connected with I-58 and Leslie Brakefield back there, who is doing the housing ministry. And Leslie's got him set up to, I think he's on the list for a heating and air unit and a few other things to get his house up to speed so that DSS will approve his house so his kids can come home. And then if he needs something, if he needs some beds or a dresser, I just know that Audrey Bryant's going to go rummaging through our warehouse and will find a bed or a dresser, and her team will find clothes or whatever it may be, and they'll make sure. If not, they'll scour Facebook until they find it. Or we'll go buy it if we can't get it, and he'll have the stuff that he needs. And then he can be comforted that while he's keeping his grandchildren with him, that if his daughter should ever turn and want help, that there's this little thing on Friday night called Celebrate Recovery with Baron and Molly and Kathy and some of those that will love this woman into freedom from this addiction. And so I bring those things up to tell you that we're at 3 years, and I started asking myself, you know what? 3 years doesn't look a lot different than 30, does it? You know, 1 year, man, that's cool and fun, and it's exciting, and I can ride that thing. Year two, I'm still riding. Year three, you start to look around and go, you know what? Year three and 30 kind of look like the same thing. I wonder what's in it for me. You know what's in it for me and you? More of the same thing. That the towel that we took up, we never let down. We never put it down. We just keep serving, and we just keep ministering, and we just keep washing feet. Until the people at the barbershop, and the people at the restaurant, and the people at the grocery store know this self-sacrificing God that we serve, that gave His life, that He lost His so that we could find ours, that He gave Himself away so that we could find life. Which is, finally, let me close with this process, which is when you come in often you come in as just an infant. And what happens then is this church should rally around you, give its life away to you in order to help you grow up. But I need to be clear about what the expectation is. An 80-year-old baby is a difficult thing to be around, right? A person who is 30 and 40 and 50 and 60 and still selfish, difficult to be around. We're not made to just constantly be poured into, but to pour out. That is the secret of the cross. When you pour your life out, you get it. When you lose it, you gain it. When you give it away, you get it back in more measure. Even with our kids, I think that some of the problems that we've gotten into is we wanted to give them everything, right? Because we love them. We want them to give the best of everything. I think that's the Father heart of God. He wants to give us the best of everything. But there might be a part that we even missed in them, which is this. You've been given everything. Now, in like manner, go and give your life away. Maybe that's the part we missed. Maybe that's the part that you missed. And I want to call you back that whenever you look at a cross, wherever it is, did Jesus die to save us from our sins? Yes. Did He die so that we could be forgiven? Yes, He did. But there's something else there, that the path there was self-sacrifice. The path there was a cross-like love. It was a Calvary kind of love that, Ember, I want to draw you back to. That if you're visiting with us today, I want to draw you to and say it is the most beautiful thing you have ever seen. The life of Jesus. Why? Because He's given His life away.